An ice cube, held it on it, and then a fresh Stanley blade. Oh, I finished off the last bit of my banjo myself. So what was the one that sounded like croissant?
Don't mention croissant.
What was that one?
Don't mention croissant. Oh, we're getting onto croissant.
Oh, snap, Carter.
Well, this didn't involve his mother.
What? You mean that's how we were?
Welcome back to Trade Legends.
Do you want to start? It's quite good.
No, you do.
So here we are again, Trade Legends episode, whatever it is, and yeah, good to see you,
back
Pete.
In the hot seat.
Good to see you with your fresh.
I was on time tonight.
Are you fresh fade?
Thank you.
You weren't really on time, but you know, we'll say you're on time.
I was earlier than I've been in the past.
A few super fans. But we've got two new great guests on tonight, and we've got Eriok,
yes,
also known as
the Valley Viking.
The Valley Viking.
By others, not my. It's not my.
Have you coined that yourself?
No, it's been gifted to me. I've taken it and run.
It's been bestowed upon me as the Valley Viking.
It's my calling.
So yeah, nice to have you on, and we've also got Aidan from
ILH Timber Framing.
Timber Framing. So I'm really excited to get you both on. Obviously, I've seen a lot of your work. We thought you'd be a good pairing because obviously you both work with a certain thing called wood. And yeah, who do you want to start with then tonight, Pete? Who should we start with?
Who's come the furthest?
I think you come first.
Well, I haven't done today because I was only down in Milton.
where are you based?
Battle near East Sussex.
Okay.
Pete, you know where that is?
You sound like you're from Wales.
I am. Well, give it away.
Yeah. So to win a power tool mate voucher for this episode, as we have a lovely Welsh Viking on, and Pete's knowledge of Welsh geography is atrocious, we are going to do a test. How many places in Wales can Pete name in 20 seconds?
20 seconds, okay.
Answers in the comments.
Yeah.
Whoever gets it right obviously wins the voucher.
Just it won't be many.
Just in case people don't understand that.
I'd go less than five.
Right, we might as well start with you. Now we're in the Welsh,
yeah.
With the Welsh vibe. So as we always do when we get people on the show.
Take us back to the start. Where did it all start for you?
He's on fire tonight.
Otherwise he'll say, tell us where did you go to college?
What kind of things did you do when you were growing up?
Just tell it. Give us your story from the start.
I'll go from the start. I mean, so obviously apprenticeship, 3 years, 16 to 19, straight out from apprenticeship into subcontracting. It was the turn of the recession, so headed over to Australia for a couple of months and came back and then self-employed ever since up until a year and a half ago.
Did you go to Australia to learn more of your trade? Or
literally just to work, because there wasn't a lot of work back home in the carpentry. I kind of seen the opportunity to, I'll be honest with you, I'm glad I went, not just for work, but like to learn about myself as well. I was 20 years old. I turned 21 in Australia, which was like one of the best things ever, because 21 is a big number, so very good. But you know, I rocked up in Perth airport 1:30 in the morning, not knowing where I was going, and I'm here to tell the tale, so I must have done something right. But it was quite daunting. Came back, done the subcontracting for 10 years, and then Eriok was invented, I suppose, last year in lockdown because of the demand for the carpentry work, mainly in the private sector.
What's a carpentry apprenticeship like? Is it day release college similar to what I did for plumbing?
Yeah, so the first year for myself was, if I remember, it was 3 days on, sorry, 3 days in college, 2 days on site.
Yeah.
And the other 2 years then was the 4 days on site, 1 day college. It's quite mad. Level two, you're qualified, but you're not qualified. Done the advanced carpentry level three, and obviously went out, started learning.
I mean, what's the difference then for anybody that's thinking about getting into carpentry with the level two and the level three? What changes in that?
So this is obviously level three was like more of the roofing side of it, like cut roofing and things. We've done a bit of managerial skills as well, but it's quite a grey area of college at the moment because the curriculum is so dated.
Mm.
So if anyone asks me, is it worth going to college? I say no, on the basis of a lot of the things you learn in college, you'll never take them out to site. Funny enough, last week I cut a dovetail joint that I haven't done for 17 years. Mm. Just goes to show, like, it's dated. And I think when you're on site, you need to be learning what you're going to be doing every day.
Yeah. Can you still get qualified then?
Yes, you can get qualified. A lot of people I work with, they've done the on-site assessment. They come out, they come in as a chippy's mate, get a bit of experience, and then they learn from the people on site then, which is the best experience you're going
to
get.
Because I think a lot of people, if you said that to them, they go, oh, well, how do I get qualified? Because I'd be thinking if I was an apprentice or wanting to become an apprentice, like...
It's a grey area. It's good. It's a good experience. It's good to learn the older aspects of carpentry, whether you use them or not. But there's so many different fields in carpentry you can go out to. You can go to bench joinery. You can go like timber framing, second fix. I kind of carpenter in my eyes is everything to the full lot.
I mean, is there any instances where you would say it's beneficial for somebody to go to college? Say if they're, you know, they're going down the route of trying to get an apprenticeship and they just can't physically get one. Would you still recommend?
I'd say to try and get the apprenticeship route. Because if you're going to the college, a lot of people will poach the colleges for apprentices. Luckily, I knew someone on their own carpentry business, so I was very fortunate to get into that. But yeah, again, it is catch 22.
Yeah.
But for me, personal experience, if you can get on site with the guys out in the coalface, learn everything there, and then get the on site assessment as well.
Yeah.
Well, you just said, I was speaking to a guy today, he was a farmer. And he was talking about mechanics, and he said, traditional mechanics, they are mechanics. They can, if you take a car in, let's say it's got like a alternator's broke, they'll take it to bits, put it back together and fix it. Whereas modern day mechanic might just take it out and put a new one in. And he was saying that modern day mechanics are more like, he calls them fitters, because they just fit new stuff. Whereas a traditional mechanic can fix anything. And it's similar to your trade, the tradition of it, and what you might learn.
I think partly with that, with the mechanic side, is parts now are so cheap to make that people just think for the actual time it takes to fix something, which shouldn't be the logic in it. It's just cheaper just to whack something.
But the real skill of that trade, mechanic, is being able to
take something problem apart, solve, strip
take
it,
something apart, and, strip it, rebuild it, fix it.
Yeah. Again, with the college, like I said, Aidan, you do like a lot of bespoke, like, pergolas and things like that as well.
Like
the old school carpentry at the joints, and that's the way you're going to learn that. But then there's a lot more work, like site based at the moment, from what I've seen, than it is like with what you do yourself. So I think a lot of people just go to college, get out on site, and house bashing is like your main start, I think, when you go, you know.
I mean, one thing I picked up on, so you were talking when you first got into everything, there was the recession, there wasn't much work, you've gone over to Australia. Firstly, was there, I take it you were doing the same thing in Australia, you're doing the carpentry work there?
No, believe it or not, I wasn't. I started doing form work, which is like shuttering, obviously. Couldn't handle the heat. Because I went out in there peak summer, and it was just way too warm. Done a week, jacked it in. But the good thing about Australia at the time was, if you didn't do a job, and you want a new one next day, you get it like that.
Yeah.
So I tried everything. I tried landscaping, removal work, farm work, and then I settled for factory work, actually working in a galvanizing plant. So as a rigger, so outside, putting all the metal on before it gets dipped, and then come off and clean it as well. So again, learned something different, I don't know if we call that a trade, but it was something different I got, you know, hands-on with, new experience.
I mean, what I was trying to move on to with that, so I was trying to find if you were doing the same thing, but within that time period then, you've all of a sudden decided, with lockdown, probably one of the times where most people have gone, oh, actually, I'm just going to ride it out and see what it is, to then go, you know, you had that problem in the recession before, where you were thinking, well, there's not much work, and then you decide you're going to go and start your own business. What's the logic behind that? Because most people, if they'd have had that experience in 2007 or 8 or whenever it was, would have gone, I'm not going to step out now and go and do my own business. What was it then that sort of pushed you to create?
It was actually everyone else on the outside looking in, like seeing what I do, the hours I do, the work I do. Like I was subbing for 10 years for a company, and then I was running my own work alongside that. It was stupid hours, like up at 5:30, getting home about 10 o'clock in the night. And they were like, you're actually earning more money on your own. Just do it. Just go for it. If you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. And like I said, this COVID is just mental. Like the work I've never known anything like it. So I just took the opportunity and ran with it.
When you were doing, when you were employed and doing your own work?
So subcontracting.
Yeah.
And then I started Aerioc as on the side, but because of the work I was doing, I had to try and start putting money through, like private work, put it through, yeah, because I wanted to do it legitimately.
Yeah.
Good friend of mine said, you got his own electrical company, and he said, look, if you're going to start, just open up a company, start putting things through the business. If you go to tender for bigger jobs in the future, you've got kind of, you're established kind of to give a bit more of a push.
Just touching on that, what was your motivation for that? Because most people, one job's enough. Was it, were you saving up for something? Were you just, is that you just your ethic? You just that like working?
My ethic.
Yeah.
Just work. Because I know if you put in the hours, put in the graft, and just to get my name out there, meet
so
new people.
So you had a vision of, were you aiming to go on your own eventually, and that was what you were building up to?
Kind of, yeah. I always thought if I'd stay in just being a subcontractor doing carpentry, I'd always go into management. Like my other family, we're all carpenters. All the men in the family are carpenters. They've all gone into like contract managers.
Sounds familiar, this.
contract managers, yeah. Site managers. So I thought I'd just follow suit and go down that road. But my dad always said he had the opportunity to start his own carpentry company, and he kind of pushed it aside. And he said, if I had, I wish I'd started my company. He kind of processed that and thought, well, it's there, the opportunity's there.
Yeah,
I'm lucky. I got a good family behind me to support me as well. So never want to fall back on anything. I've always got a contingency.
Because trades people that you said people were saying you work too much.
Yeah,
what's like three reasons? It's either they want money, so they work as much as they can to earn as much money as they can. They've got a goal of progressing their business or going self-employed, so they have to work the normal job and then they do jobs on the side after. Or like a lot of tradesmen, they can't say no to people, so if someone rings up and says, can you do this job,
yeah,
you struggle to say no. So I'm a
yes,
probably
man.
The three reasons why people work too much. But I used to do it when I've stopped it pretty much when lockdown hit, stopped working as hard as I used to.
Yeah.
But I never did it for the money. I did it because I couldn't say no to people, basically.
Yeah.
But I think in the back of your head, whenever you're running any business, I think in the back of your head, you think if you turn somebody down once, you're never going to get that business again.
It's a style as well, though, isn't it? That's the thing. If someone said, I want to buy my product from you, don't go, I'm a bit busy at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Nah, you're all right.
Yeah.
I do sometimes now. Depends how much I like it.
It's a butterfly effect. One thing.
And especially if you just start, or you're attempting to start out, you feel like you have to do everything, which again isn't probably the best route to go down.
It's scary in the back of your mind. You're like, you're on your own now. If you've done, get the work, and like it's happened the last couple of weeks, I've tendered for jobs and they haven't come through. Mm-hmm. So good job, I've overbooked.
Yeah.
Because it's keep me ticking over. If I have like, Dawson, Mrs. Jones, and then next week a kitchen for so-and-so Joe Blogs, and then one falls through, it's like, oh, I've got no work for this week now. Yeah. And you kind of chasing your tail. So yeah, as it comes to me, I just book it in. Kind of silly to do as well sometimes because I'm overworked as well.
I think it's better to be overworked than sitting in a situation, because from me looking in now on sort of trades and what's happening with the economy, the recession that I think's personally going to come, is I always think having people booked in, even if they do drop out, at least you've got people will think, oh, I've got it booked in now, I don't mind waiting. Whereas if you say, oh, I'll come back to you in a couple of months, people have the opportunity then change their mind.
Yeah.
So
what I've got from all the guests we've interviewed over the last couple of years, though, is that if you sort of believe in yourself, and if someone does come to you and you are too busy, you just be honest with them and say, look, I'm really busy, I do want to do your job, but I can't do it until here. And a lot of the time, what I've heard from people is they will wait for you. But it's getting into that mindset, because like you've just said, and like you've just said, most self-employed tradespeople think, if I say no to this job, they'll go with someone else. And then what if I've not got any work on next week after?
That's probably why you used to do it, say yes to everything, because in the back of your mind, you're thinking, these people have supported me and I don't want to let them down, because if I do let them down, then they go somewhere else.
Yeah.
But sometimes you can't be everywhere and do everything.
Yeah, so it's a lesson that you got to learn pretty early on, because like you say, you'll burn out if you're doing too much.
But what's happened now is just kind of I want to take the business like next level.
What's the next step then for you?
So the next step is what's actually happening now. I got a job booked in August. So again, I actually was meant to go to the kitchen at the property, recommended, and they wanted full building works done as well. Extension, new floors, steels, the lot. So I said, yeah, I'll do it for you. So I got in people that I've worked with a lot and alongside over the years, builder, electrician, plumber. And my worry was if I said no to doing the kitchen, like, well, sorry, I'll do the kitchen, but I won't do the rest of the work. It'll be, oh, we'll get someone else in to do the work. Or they do the carpentry as well. So I'm losing out on work. So I thought, right, let's just do it. Jump in the deep end. I kind of oversee the job. My dad's a site manager anyway, so I've always got that person to come in and have a, you know, if I needed assistance or help with anything. Sub it out to people I know are reputable and really good at their job and I trust. And I kind of start, like, I want to start like a building, not a building company, as if I'm like price and everything, everyone works for me. It's like just get a team together, go in, do the work and go out and try and showcase the work for the next project then. Mm. Don't want to lose out on the carpentry. That's my biggest thing. But it's kind of turned into this new thing of, oh, well, aerial carpentry limit could become something bigger and better. So August, the job starts. It's a five-figure budget. It's quite a big budget. And yeah, I'm quite confident we're going to, I know we'll put it off.
Yeah.
Like obviously being a carpenter as well, you see everything on site as well.
That's, I mean, for me, like, always thinking about doing something extra is how I think, you know, like I'm never ever satisfied, which sometimes isn't a great thing, but I always just think you've got to keep pushing it. I mean, does it daunt you in a way? Because you say you trust these other people and to come and do the job, but as you know, there's always a weak link somewhere. Does that in your head, do you think, whams if that does go wrong and then actually like I'm ending up footing a bill for something because I've got to get somebody else in, they charge me more or anything like that? Because I always find the more people that get involved with a project, sometimes the more blurred or the more confusing it gets.
Yeah, I know where you're coming from. I suppose it's got to go on instinct and try the people that I wouldn't get anyone in to do this work because people like I've worked with them a lot.
I mean, on the flip side, if it does work, then you've got like a group of people that you know you can always say, look, this is coming up. Can you
well, we've done it. We've just done a recent bedroom renovation, only a small job, but then like I took the guy who was doing the job for, his father's quite ill, so he said, look, can you just sort the job off me? The money's there, you organise it all, get it done for me. I said, yeah, I'll do it for you. So quick bedroom flip over and yeah, turned out brilliant. So it's not a lot, but it's like the start of getting the team together, working alongside other trades. Like I said, I've been doing it for years. Obviously, when I worked on site, I was supervisor for a carpentry company. So I had boys under me. So I know how to deal with other tradespeople. And obviously, being a carpenter, you're from start to finish and you see all the other trades. You kind of pick up not what they do distinctively, but how a job runs. Because any like you get the site managers these days, they're like, I want knocking on the table, but they're like that. You know what I mean? So you get some site managers and more sites run themselves as long as you've got good people working on them. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. So
I'm 2 years from now, Aerioc contract.
Yeah, contract.
And can people
prestige worldwide.
People that are watching this now, can they follow this job? Will that be on your social?
Yeah, it's because of how big a project it is. I've already set it up. Like I'm going to get some like new filming equipment. I'm going to really like full on showcase it. The couple I'm doing the job for, they're like, yeah, check on Instagram. It's brilliant. We love it. That's awesome. How they found me as well through Instagram. And yeah, showcase the whole job. And if I can, I say if I can, I know it's going to work out, but if we can showcase this job as a whole with this team, people are going to come to us then and go, this guy does the full lot. You can look at the work they're producing. Awesome. So that's the next step. And if it can go that way, then brilliant. Mm. I was trying to push myself as well. I'm trying to have a challenge.
Yeah.
So I'll keep it short and I'll keep it sweet. As you can see, got one of these lovely Bisley Workwear t-shirts on here. They're our good friends, our main headline sponsor. And just to show some appreciation for the real good quality workwear that these guys do, they've given us a 15% off discount code. So if you click here, it'll take you straight through. So if you're interested in some decent workwear gear, Bisley's got you covered.
Just before we move on, I don't think we ask people this enough. What's your favourite part of your job and what's your least favourite part of
podcast with me and you?
As in the carpentry aspect?
The carpentry aspect, yeah.
My least favourite would probably be, believe it or not, set and fix because of the amount of kit you need.
Yeah.
Favourite is roofing. Absolutely love roofing. I would do that every day if I could.
Unless cut it rains. And stuff.
But I don't get a lot of it. On the private sector, there's not a lot of it. So, yeah.
What is it about the roofing? Is it because you're outdoors? Is
it's
it...
always that thing of like, look at this door I've done. Yeah, look at this roof. And there's just this like grand.
Like, so it's a job like, satisfaction.
Like the way you just done in Swansea on the copper works, like that building itself is really historic. It's back to like the 17th century, I think, where they started rolling up the copper. And they've just renovated the building and it was all hand cut, like massive roof in right by the Liberty Stadium in Swansea. Yeah, so that was a big deal for me because of the heritage it's got and how it was done as well.
It's one of them jobs when you got kids and you go, I worked on that.
That is, that's like, that's like everywhere. Go on, down that roof, down that door, down that kitchen.
Worked on that.
So the work you do, that's going to be a big thing for you, isn't it? The job satisfaction, standing back and looking at what you've...
Yeah, I mean, with the... Because we primarily now just fit oak frames. So yeah, like some of our jobs will be a 3-bay garage. It's only 4 days work for us. So just stand back in those 4 days and go, that's done.
Yeah. he goes, don't worry. He says, I won't tap on the side.
Everyone does it.
It kicks me as well, though.
Right, take us back to where it all started for you.
Well, I left school and I ended up working in a restaurant, washing pans.
Yeah.
Then, which job my dad got me, told me I had to go and do this job. Then 3 years later, still working there at the NVQ level 2 and 3 in catering. Left that and then had nothing to do. Done a bit of labouring and then basically my godfather at the time, he owned a good sized carpentry company.
Yep.
And my dad just walked in one day and said,
You're going to work.
And literally just said, I've got an apprenticeship. And I said, I don't like carpentry. And he went, I don't care.
You do now. You do now.
So that was it. He literally, I think I started that in about 2 weeks after he told me. And I think I was 18 then. So I'd done my college. So I was done on my first, second, third year.
Yeah.
18, 19 and 20. So I was a little bit later than everyone there.
Yeah.
The only good thing I found that when I did my courses was that everyone I was at college with was just finished school. So they were very young for their age.
Yeah.
And it was, they were just not interested.
Pissing about.
Yeah, so I used to do same as the, used to do 2 days and then 3 days at work. And I ended up, what I actually tried to end up doing was I needed to do 1 day a week at college and 4 days on site. Because I just literally just tried to do it as quick as possible. Didn't make it any quicker over the years, but I'd rather be at work.
Well, you guys are both saying that you're learning more.
Yeah. And that's exactly the same, is that I just found that, I mean, I remember my tutor showing me how to hang a door and got me a planer out and all that. And I said, what's that for? And he said, well, this is how you got to do it. It's the old way of doing it. And I said, we're going to use electric power tools. And he said, yeah, but you've got to learn the old way. If you haven't got electricity. And I said, if we haven't got electricity on the job, you're going to walk outside. Yeah, because you're not...
for the safety, mate.
Yeah, you're just not going to do it that way. And exactly what I was saying, like, some of the stuff they were teaching, even then, and that's 20 years ago, was just irrelevant. It wasn't...
What needs to change then on that? Because we hear from some people that it's... they have a different experience, don't they, where it's actually not too bad. But I just think, why are the colleges and the educational...
What I found in the first year was the mix of, like, you join as some cabinet makers to a degree and then your carpenters. That first year, they were mixed together. So you were doing dove joints and just stuff that you knew you're never going to use again. You're just not going to do that. And then really, the third year... like I had to do as well, was your roofing, your management, and pricing, and some sort of degree of business sense of it as well. But a lot of these places now, they only do 2 years.
Mm.
So most companies will only do 2 years apprenticeships. That's it. So really the first year, they're not really learning. They're learning sort of bits and pieces of carpentry. The second year, they're learning a bit more. And actually the important year, when you're doing your framing and your roofing, they have no idea about.
Right. I mean, what needs to change in that aspect? Because, like, for me, if people are going to college or they can't get the apprenticeship and the only option is to go to college, Like, what would you suggest that can make these courses better?
Well, like, the whole schooling system in the UK basically is now, unfortunately.
Because I'm quite surprised that there's, because you've got like specialist unis for, I went to one for sound engineering. Yeah. So there was an actual specialist university in the end for multimedia sound engineering and stuff like that. But you don't actually have many, like, just literally it's just trades. Like the whole college is just a trade. But
the thing with going to university is you're paying for that. And that if they need to change, like if they need to update the carpentry apprenticeship, someone's got to write a new thing. It's going to cost money, isn't it?
The other thing as well is your tutor is going to be a carpenter. To a degree.
Or used to be a carpenter.
So now, if you say that your tutor, he's 40-odd years old and you might be only getting £30,000 a year, if he was a good carpenter, he'd be outside earning £50,000 a year.
Yeah.
So you're not probably getting the key.
Yeah.
If you're a teacher, you're a teacher, aren't you? That's your job. If you're a carpenter, you don't end up in like being 40 years old thinking, oh, I'll go and teach some kids how to.
I mean, what's it? Because you've done a few things recently where you've gone back to colleges. What do you see when you're there? Because obviously I'm not in one of those classrooms to sort of like
pick up on it. It all depends on the type of the student or the apprentice, because if they want to learn and if they're keen, they'll be great and they'll thrive. But if a lot of people are there because their dad said, you go in college.
Yeah, I get that.
And until they fall in love with the trade. Like, how long, you said you didn't like carpentry. How long before you... Because obviously you like
it. Still doesn't like it now.
But you said, you were at college, but you wanted to be at work, didn't you?
Yeah, so. To be honest, it wasn't more the carpenter. I mean, I always liked making things and stuff like that. So it wasn't an issue. It's just something I wasn't interested in. And I think only really a few months, and I was like, oh, I quite enjoy this.
Yeah.
And as the years have gone on, I mean, I love work. Like, I'm horrendous. Yeah. Like, I'm like those weird people that just... I'll sit here and talk about work all night.
So take us back then. You've completed college. What's the next sort of thing in your story?
I continued working for my godfather and his company. And we used to do a lot of the big site works down in the southeast. And really, I had to leave, unfortunately, because just money.
Yeah.
I thought I was doing a better job than some people, so it was just time for me to leave. And everyone had always said to me, once you finish your apprenticeship, like we were just saying then, get out there. You can probably double your salary in 24 hours, basically. Well,
do you think that's something that people misjudge then, where they've got an apprentice and they always think they're always going to be the apprentice and they never then go, actually, I'll put your money up. If you'd have gone and said... look, I want paying more, and they said, well, this is what we can pay you, and it was like you fell.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You probably would have stayed. Do you think that's something that people misjudge?
I'd say I did go to them and ask for a significant more money, and they were like, no, you know what I mean, because you're an improver now.
Yeah.
I think the way I'd done it with the 3 years that I was improving all the time, and I sort of more or less finished that.
But would you think you would have stayed if they'd have just said, well, we might not be able to stretch that, but we can give you this.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. No. Yeah, yeah, because I love the company.
People lose out on that. What's the point in training? I always think, like, what's the point in helping these guys get better or do a job better? And then if they came to me and said, I'm struggling financially, or could you help me out with this? If somebody's good at the job, just...
I think the nail in the coffin for me, unfortunately, was that I'd looked at what I was doing compared to another chap on a site. And you see, we used to have about 30, 40 carpenters on. And he was, I can't remember what sort of wages he was on, but I mean, he turned up all brand new tools. And I'd said to him, oh, you've only been in carpentry. And he said, oh, I'm sort of doing a bit of DIY and stuff like that. But I used to sort of work in a builder's yard. And I was like, all right. And I sort of said, how much money do you want then? And he was on sort of full whack. So when I sort of turned around to my old governor then, and I said, look, he's on X amount of money. I'm on like £70 a week. And he just said, well, yeah, but he's got a missus and mortgage and all that. I said, what's that got?
He's gone back somewhere up there.
It's got nothing to do with me. That has nothing to do, no relevance. And I say, it was a shame, because I worked with some really nice old boys. It was all old boys, and they were all good. Do you know what I mean? From first fix, kitchens, roofing.
Yeah.
We never done truss roofs. You know what I mean? Everything we did was cut and pitch, everything. So I ended up a really good... skill set coming from there, and then to leave there to go out and sites of other companies was just, it was an eye-opener, really big eye-opener to how
How shit it is.
Yeah, how shit most people are.
Yeah.
I mean, on site, I mean, some of the, I mean, say, we always worked on site, but then we were going to bigger sites. I mean, some blokes just have not got a clue what they're doing. No. It is.
How do they even get on these sites, though?
Just well? You can, and just you. Then I mean, it, there was no CSCS then or anything, and you'd literally get a start the next day.
Yeah,
it's no real difference nowadays. Mm. No real difference. But I don't go out on sites nowadays, so I don't mind it.
Does it tip you over the edge?
Oh, I'll be honest, like, if someone was wanting me on site at 7:30 in the morning, stopping at 10 o'clock, stopping at 1 o'clock and finishing at 5, I'd have no interest.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we start when we want to start. We don't have a tea break. We don't have a lunch break. And we're normally finished by 3:30 in the afternoon.
Mm.
But then we travel all over the UK. So
yeah,
my days are very different to most people's.
Yeah.
So we can leave at like 3:30 in the morning, 5. So
You've left there. You obviously went and did site work. What then? How do you progress into what you're currently doing now?
Well, the recession in I don't know what year it was now.
2008. 2008 or the one?
No, the one before.
Was it?
Yeah, that came in at the time. The company I was working for, they had about 40 chippies on, and they literally just got rid of like 50% of blokes. So I went, and I think literally in about 1 week I had two jobs that I could go and do. One was for a good chippy company down the road from me. I decided not to go with them, and I went with a local builder doing some work, and then I straight on with him. So in the middle of the start, that very start of the recession, and that was it. Never stopped from there. And literally, I think, year into doing work for him, I got involved with an oak frame company. We were cutting oak frames very rarely, do you know what I mean? Mm. But we were sort of watching the YouTube, a lot of that sort of stuff, because that was new to me. Mm. And then from there, yeah, it was good. With the oak frame company we deal with now, literally the last 9 years, that's just gone from strength to strength to strength.
Yeah.
So we used to started off with like 3 frames a year, and it went to like 3 frames a month. I think last year we fitted 98 oak frames. I mean, I've been trying to set up a website for about 6 years now. And every time I go to set a website up, and it's normally when it's a bit quiet, I think I'll get the website sorted and I'll start doing it, and then it gets busy and I just don't bother.
So, ladies and gents, tradesmen and women, I am trying to help you organise yourself. So we have teamed up with Tradeify, which is a software brand that if you are struggling to get organised, to look after your customers and to get everything ready for the jobs that you are going to need, then Tradeify is an all-in-one solution. So we've teamed up with those guys. If you click this little link just up here, you get 50% off your first 3-month subscription, and you also can have a 14-day free trial. This is another thing that I like. The amount of comments I always get that all we ever do is talk about social media on here.
Yeah.
But obviously this is going out on social media.
Yeah.
But everybody that comes on here says, I don't advertise.
Yeah.
Word of mouth, but I get my business, whether it's through Facebook, page for a local area if you're a plumber, or it's Instagram, people are picking me up from my work on there.
Yeah.
I mean, your work, both for you, I always find people that work timber, wood, like Simon Bowler, anybody like that, that it's so good to look at your work. Mm. Obviously, if I'm looking at, no disrespect to any Sparky listening, but when I'm looking at a board, I'm sort of like, oh yeah, those wires are neat. But when you look at something where it's like,
I look at a plug socket and think, oh, that look nice.
Look at that chrome.
It's on the piss. It's on the piss. But you know what I mean? Like, for say when you're doing stuff and you're just like, if you're hanging a boiler and it's just, I'm looking at the boiler, but I'm looking at the pipe work, and you see, you know, like that picture that you put up the other day of, yeah, go follow this guy, and it, yeah, was literally like an organ in a cathedral, mm, like that sort of stuff. But for you guys, like it's such a great tool, I find. I mean, how are you, obviously, I presume your main source of business is via social media as well now?
Not the main source.
Mm.
Obviously, word of mouth is the biggest thing for me. That's why I was doing, like I said, trying to, for years, since I was an apprentice, just weekends, just work, get your name out there, get experience. But yes, Instagram is the biggest platform I use, and that is starting to play a bit of a part, because it's just that thing, people can relate to me. They know, before they pick up the phone, they've already seen me on the screen. They've seen who I am as a person, what I do. They can see my work.
They're expecting Thor to rock up at the door.
I am here.
What about you? Would you say social plays a big part for you for finding work? Or not
really, no. No. So the company we deal with now, we've dealt with them for years, and that works sort of 95% of our workload now. Apart from that, I mean, we used to do a lot of developments over the last 10 years for builders. We don't do that anymore now. I've stopped that completely. So we have got a revenue of work that we don't need to advertise for at all. But with the social media, yeah, we do get quite a lot. Instagram, I get a lot. And I'll be honest, sometimes I don't even respond. Because you just know it's going to be...
Oh, trade legends. Well, oh, God.
I'll tell you the worst thing why I don't respond is because... A lot of my followers on Instagram are in America.
Yeah.
So I get these Americans now emailing me saying, oh, can you give us a price for this? And I'm like, oh, I'm in the UK. And they're like, oh, I'm in like Texas. I'm like, yeah. I'm not going to be able to do the job.
Maybe you should start.
And well, yeah.
Americans love timber framing. They love wood.
They do, yeah.
But I talk to a lot of the big timber framing companies in America. That's the main people I talk to because of what I do. I don't really, there's quite a few carpenters I talk to in the UK, but my main sort of focal point chatting with people is American framers, which is pretty useless because I'm not going to get any work from them.
Yeah. I still think you can learn stuff off other people other countries and stuff like that.
So your work, you travel up and down the country, could be anywhere.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You're more local.
Yeah, unfortunately, when I was subbing,
leave the valleys.
I was all over the country when I was subbing.
Yeah.
But now it's just like a 30-minute radius, which is great. I've got Cardiff, the Rhondda, and then Bridgend. That's like my radius.
Yeah, I know it will.
It's by Bristol, isn't it? Or Hereford, which you tried to mention.
What was the one that sounds like croissant?
Don't mention croissant.
What was that one?
Don't mention croissant. Oh, we're getting onto croissant. So, do you want to talk about croissant?
No, we don't. You can look at that in the scene.
Right, let's get the fun.
Can I tell them about croissant?
Yeah, it's a made-up story, doesn't it? Like, it's like a way far-fetched.
So you remember Sam, who we had on, who broke his spine? So he was on Carpentry by Sam's stag do the other week. He got a bit leery. Things got out of hand, a bit out of control. Came back to the hotel room drunk. What did you have in hand? Was it a kebab or something like that?
Oh, I just got completely bollocked naked.
He got completely bollocked naked, and then
Dave
and
then there, that's all.
Mr. Dave Elwood Finnegan was in the bed next to him, thinking, hold on a minute, I've got a Welsh Viking here who's helicoptering me in the face, and then woke up in the morning and decided to tell everybody that his penis was shaped like a croissant. It was thin at both ends and fat in the middle, just to wind him up, and now the name croissant has stuck with him. So
but before
anybody says anything, it's not a croissant.
Yeah, it's not a croissant, but the inside, but what happened
it's
was...
It's a pan of chocolate. Yeah, 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 yeah.
It looked like a pan of chocolate at one point.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so before you made up that story, which is completely irrelevant, I actually did break my manhood as well, which we disclosed earlier on.
You broke your manhood?
Yeah.
You're going to have to explain this. Oh,
we did it earlier on.
Oh, was this a carpenter accident?
Was this a banjo or an actual...
Snap cartridge. We've already been through it, like, and this is gospel truth as well. Like, scariest time of my life. I'm not scared of anything other than cotton wool. That's my fear.
Cotton wool? I'm scared of cotton wool. I can't touch it.
Yeah.
Unless it's wet.
Yeah, exactly the same.
And also, you got the same thing with like, woolen gloves?
Not so much woolen gloves. And like, I don't mind a cotton bud.
It's the chewing.
It's like wrapped tight.
If you bit into a woolen glove, I can't stand that.
Yeah, to take them off, huh?
Yeah, I can't touch cotton wool.
Crunch, it's like a crunch.
I hate it.
My sister's polystyrene. You know, like the feel of polystyrene.
Yeah.
I'm just normal and there's nothing wrong with me. Just saying. Cross on. Panu chocolat. Ooh la la.
This isn't going to go out, by the way.
It is.
I told the story about when I snapped my banjo.
So I've done that as well.
Yeah.
It is the most
Jesus Christ, what is this? Dodgy Dink Syndicate.
What are you two doing? I mean, I'm happy for this to
go out.
I'm happy for this to go out if you want me to tell the story.
Django and Chain.
So it was the same night though, that's the worst thing.
He's only thought of this because he's thinking of George Michael in the show.
Do you want to hear the story or not? So when I was about, I reckon I was about 19.
So you're going to say 9?
I snapped my banjo during sex. No. But not all the way through. So pulled out and there was blood everywhere. Now
she's on a period. Oh no.
That's initially what I thought. And I thought, that's fine. And then I looked at it. It's like, fucking hell. It's coming from me. So panicked. Stopped the bleeding. Went to the doctors the next day. And just said, you've got to like stop having sex for a while until it's healed. Yeah. So I left it like 2 or 3 weeks, thought it was okay. The very next time I had sex, it went again, blood everywhere. So I thought, right, I'd look at it, it's hanging on by a thread. So I got these, you know them, the Durex condoms with the...
I thought you were going to say I got some Gorilla Glue and just...
But it's been a default.
Do you want to let me tell the story?
Got some print stick out.
You could get, at the time, you could get Durex condoms with some kind of delaying cream in, like a, so I got those, rubbed it all over my banjo to numb it, got an ice cube, held it on it, and then a fresh, boiled it in boiling water, Stanley blade. And I finished off the last bit of my banjo myself.
Classic. Did you celebrate the bar mitzvah?
No, it was literally, it's just the last bit that was holding it on, because I knew it was going to snap again. I couldn't wait. So, yeah, numbed it, sliced it through, and it's been fine ever since.
Half of it missing.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in embarrassing bodies here. Literally.
That's where
my story is. My story is half up to yours, and then it stopped. It happened, and that was it. No, but the blood is
scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Performed surgery on myself. Little known fact, now you know about PB.
That's what they're calling PB.
Pete's banjo.
Pete's banjo.
That's it, they were stuck.
Oh, God.
Oh, I'm sweating so much. Well, we're going to the final thought then. Let's get it wrapped up.
Pun intended.
So, as you know, myself and Pete, we always want to try and give back to the people that watch and listen to the show. So we've done you an absolute solid. We've got loads of discounts from top name brands all across the internet. So if you want to save some money on tools, software, tool bags, accessories, then go and check out our discount page, which is just located here. Hopefully there's a saving on there for you. And that's a little bit of a thank you from myself and Pete for supporting the channel.
I was sweating, honestly, when I was doing it. It was fucking...
I'll be honest with you, anything to do with your manhood as a guy, you just go...
Yeah. Mm. All right, boys, we'll do the final thought then. So if you want to pass on some wisdom you've learned over the years, if you want to plug your channel, if you want to... Whatever you want to tell the people watching, is there anything you've learned over the years that you sometimes you think of... Like,
if you were a teacher and you were having to pass on that knowledge, what... advice or thing?
So the best thing I'd probably say to anybody, and what I've always done, is if you're looking at a job and you're a bit worried about doing it, just do it, because you will overcome any fear as you move along, and you will do it.
Yeah.
And each time it gets easier and easier and easier. So a lot of the jobs we do, we turn up completely blind to like access, the client, everything. To start with, I was like, oh, God, what are they going to be like? And over the years, as it's one of those things, as you get older as well, you just don't worry about it. And I just say to people, don't worry. Just do your job good, and you'll always get work.
Adapt and overcome. For myself, I think the best advice I can give anyone, if you're starting your own business or changing companies, just don't burn your bridges. Like, always have a backup plan, something to fall back on. Don't burn your bridges. And, yeah, I think that's it, really.
Work hard,
graft, give it 110%, and yeah, don't listen to anyone trying to put you down. Just keep going for it, because like I said, I'm sitting here and I was worried. I mean, 2 years ago, I never thought I'd have an Instagram account, let alone doing what I'm doing now. So just keep going for it, don't burn any bridges, and Yeah, it's weird. Graft.
And
graft.
And learn your Welsh names.
Yes.
Done. So thank you very much for coming on.
No, I appreciate
and
it.
Coming up. So
if you like listening to Al talk over all the guests, no, just if you've enjoyed this episode of Trade Legends, listening to Al talk over everybody else and people banging on the desk, if you've enjoyed listening to and watching today, you're fucking gonna just stay still one space just for a minute.
If you've enjoyed watching this, blah 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 blah. Okay, right, just, 3, 2, 1,
go. So I'll just not do it. Oh. Yeah, sure. I'm gonna shut up for just like a minute. If you've enjoyed listening and watching today's Trade Legends podcast, please subscribe to our channel. It'll really help us out. We're a new podcast. We want to do big things. And you subscribing, hitting the little bell so you get notifications, be just great. Thank you.
Hitting the little bell? I was like, ah, yeah, ding, 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 ding.
There is a little bell in there.